evening and welcome to episode 478 of the Jersnet podcast. Sunday 17th of May, it's 9:30 for the live show. If you're watching this on catch up, you're very welcome as well. I'm your host tonight, I'm John McCallum. Jersnet podcast, of course, is the independent Rangers podcast made by fans for fans, where the content is completely free. It's not just the podcast we have at Jersnet. We have a forum, we have articles, there's social media, and there's a great history archive. If this is your first time to the pod, we would encourage you to subscribe and hopefully join us again next season, or even spend a summer catching up on some of the great ones in the archive from some of the great games we've had this season. Podcasts have often been the highlight of the season for most of us. Now, before I go any further, I just need to have a quick mention about our sponsors who help us make all this happen. And again, this season it's been Forest Precision Engineering, and they are a subcontract Glasgow-based engineering company and a big, big commercial supporter of Rangers and have been backing the pod for a couple of years now. We're very much delighted about that. If precision engineering isn't what you need in your life, perhaps you might be interested in the Forest Precision Executive Lounge, which is a stunning hospitality area within the main stand. And if you want information on how to book that, you contact the club directly at hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Now, it's the end of one of probably the most frustrating and ultimately disappointing seasons that certainly I can recall. It ended with a 5-2 win at Falkirk in a meaningless epilogue to a season that can only be filed under wasted possibilities. A title won by the poorest Celtic side in a decade in most shameful fashion. Just further underlines, frankly, how far Rangers have fallen. From the appointment of Thirlwell and Russell Martin, the puzzling nature of our summer recruitment, Martin's inevitable demise, and then the frankly embarrassing search for his replacement when we eventually appointed Danny Roll, who, let's be frank, is a manager with not a huge amount of experience and absolutely no knowledge at all of Scottish football. We then fired Thirlwell and Patrick Stewart, and that's before we even mention the football and what happened on the park. So tonight we're hopefully going to try and find some silver linings. We'll go over all of that. We'll have a look back at yesterday's game. I'm joined tonight by Alan and Stewart. I'm not joined by Alan Stewart, although perhaps a pantomime dame would be exactly what we'd have. A fitting metaphor for the season we've just had.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Thank God it's behind us. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you both tonight?
Yes, as well as we can be after that huge build-up that you gave us. It was much appreciated. And I can only say, I'm going to try to raise my game to your high standards.
Yeah, that's the standard. If that's the high standard we're all aiming for, no wonder we're doomed. Let's just see how it goes. Look, we're going to try and cover a few things tonight. We're not going to spend a great deal of time talking about yesterday's game, but we'll spend a little bit of time doing that. So, Stuart, let me start with yourself. Chambiti scored a hat-trick. Gassama and Asgard both got a goal. Butler lit in an absolute howler again. Did we learn anything from yesterday? Was it simply a friendly and all but name?
Yeah, we did learn something. Basically, save your train fare or bus fare going to Falkirk on the last day of the season. That was little more than a Parts game. And I think the fact that Chambiti turned up with a hat-trick and slammed one in the second one, like a contender for goal of the season when it didn't matter, basically said everything you wanted to know about that game.
Yeah, it was a strange game in many ways, because it did highlight a lot of what's been going on at Rangers recently, where there were moments of brilliance, like you said. I mean, the second goal, or certainly Chermiti's second goal, a contender for goal of the season, lovely control, fantastic finish. But at the same time, some diabolical defending, and frankly, 5-2 possibly flattered Rangers. Falkirk had chances to score. Alan, Ashton Scally, I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Zebedee Lawson, what a name that is, and Aidan McCallion all made their first team debuts yesterday. Did we get a glimpse of the future of Rangers? Do you expect these boys to make it at Rangers, or do we think they're probably going to be playing in League One in a few years' time? Bringing through young talent's not something we've been particularly good at? Do you think that will change in the next couple of seasons?
The short answer is no, I don't think it's going to change. It was good to see young boys getting on, it always is, but what are they, 16, 17?
I think is potentially our youngest, maybe our youngest ever, maybe even younger than Derek Ferguson.
So I think it's a case of, you know, give them that wee experience. I think Scally's was quite sought after, sort of teams down south. It was a bit of a coup to get him to sign up a contract when he turned pro. Give him that wee taster, but the next couple of years for those boys, you suspect is going to be out on loan. You know, Scally's highly rated. Lawson, I think we saw in the Queen's Park game. Again, he's got a good build on him. Nice touch, but obviously we'll have a hell of a lot of education to come on the pitch. So I'd expect to see these boys loaned out. But it's absolutely fine. You know, give them the game at the end of the season dead as rubber. You know, as Stuart says, it was a meaningless game. It was just a trading exercise. I think the score probably did flatter Rangers, but you've got to remember Falkirk would have had one eye on the beach as well. You know, they were probably just waiting for the season to go. So it is what it is. In these sorts of games, the best thing you can do, the best use of the time, I feel, is to give these young boys a wee taster of the action, and hopefully it whets their appetite and gives them the drive to improve. But, you know, next season I would expect to see all three go out on loan and try and develop. I think is it Paul Encio, that you pronounce it, his surname? He's been on loan at Raith this season. I think he got Player of the Year, if not the Young Player of the Year, and they raved about him and said he was great. Now, okay, you take account of the level he's playing at, but that's exactly what we should do with the young players. You know, send them to that level, let them develop and see what their ceiling is.
And the thing is, I mean, you say the level, I mean, Raith Rovers and the Championship, I don't think there's a huge amount between most teams in the Championship and the bottom six of the top division. I really don't think there's a huge gap between them. You saw how Falkirk did this season, having come up. I don't think there's a huge gap there and standards go yet. You know, you're not going to walk from Raith Rovers into the Rangers team, but it's certainly a decent level.
It's an educational level. You know, you get in there, you know, it's small stadiums, can be wet and windy nights, you know, elbows up and all the rest of it. You know, it's a football education for these boys. So I think they can take a lot out of it if they can perform at that level. But as always, we always say this, young players going out to that level, doing relatively well. How many actually come back to Rangers and get into the first team? It's, you know, it's single digits in the last 20 years. Someone that gets in consistently, put it that way. So, you know, we need to see that pathway. But of course, you're counting that against the demands at Rangers, the need to win every single game is a lot for a young player to take on. And you do need to have that in the back of your mind, because it's a real powder keg pressure environment to bring a young player into.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, Scally's 16 years old. 2010 he was born, which terrified me. I've got things in my fridge older than that. What a thought that is, 2010, that there's people.
You've got a fridge.
I'm told there's one there somewhere. But the thought that someone born in 2010 has now played for Rangers first team is really quite depressing, frankly. But it is. It's an exciting, it's obviously a big deal for their families, but it is exciting. And it's one of the things that was kind of promised when the new guys took over, that they would attempt to bring youth through. We'll see. But I like you. I actually was surprised nobody got a shot to the week in the Hibs game. I thought you might have seen a couple of younger lads come on in that game as well. I think the other one I heard about is Burnside. I think he's had a season at Alloa, and apparently had a pretty good season. You know, a division below again, but apparently had a decent season. So let's see. Okay, let's look back. Stuart, we were told we had four cup finals to play, and that is a direct quote. We won one of them, and let's be frank, the easiest one at that. Our five cup finals to play, and we won one of them. Is that on the players or is that on the manager?
I would say it's a bit of both. Given Rangers' recent track record in finals, it's probably par. The thing with that is, and let's cut to the chase on this one. Forget all your conspiracy theories. Forget all your match fixing and all the rest of it. There was a couple of weeks ago, Rangers were in contention for that league title, and they blew it massively. They get played off the pitch against Motherwell at home, which tells you everything you need to know about, one, the quality of the player that Rangers have compared to Motherwell, And secondly, it also tells you about what the manager's mindset is. And having, you know, given a game like that, he failed to inspire Rangers. That, for me, is the most worrying thing. Well, it was the most worrying thing up until the announcement that Rangers are going with him again for next season. That is really worrying. There is nothing I have seen from that guy that makes me think, yeah, he has got it. He's failed consistently. And even if you just take the matches after the break, Rangers have failed on numerous counts. But for me, the biggest failure is his inability to make changes. He, you know, against Hearts, Rangers were actually doing okay, but he didn't make any changes. He waited to see what Hearts were going to do and then tried to counter that. Where was the proactivity in that one? The kind of thing that he'd come up with and saying, right, we'll play with one guy up front, let's push Hearts back, let's try and play with two guys up front, or push an attacking midfielder further on, or play without a number nine and play with two wide guys. There is no inspiration coming from him. And regardless of what anybody says, I just don't see it with him. I just don't see anything there that he would say, aha, this is what he's trying to do. Because all he tries to do is same and same again.
Yeah. I would tend to agree with you in a lot of what you said there. Danny Rowe has fallen out with the club captain, Tavernier. Something that's become quite public. And I don't disagree with Kavanagh's remarks today that that's something that should have been kept in-house and it wasn't, and it's not great for the club. But anyway, it is what it is now. If reports are to be believed, he's also fallen out with Raskin, who's vanished in the last few games. And they're both important players. You know, we can criticise them. We can criticise what they've achieved at the club. Nobody is immune from criticism. But they are both fairly important players. And when you've got five games to play to win the title, to fall out both of them does it suggest man management skills that are an issue? Or do you think, frankly, both of them just had it coming?
It's difficult to know. I mean, a few weeks ago, you know, Suter disappeared from the squads as well. And he's another one of the more senior players. Now, his form merited being dropped, don't get me wrong, but nobody really twigged at the time. But as you say, once you see Raskin disappears and then Tavernier disappears, you think, hang on, is there a real issue here? And it's difficult because those are players that, okay, Tav's got, for me, he's got a lot of credit in the bank, even if his time is up. But the one thing you can say about him over 500-odd appearances is he's never failed to turn up.
No.
You know, he's always there, even in bad times. You know, and he's never done that before, so it must have been something. And I think it's one of these, I read it on Twitter, so someone else said it, but sometimes you just got to play the political game. It's like Russell Martin wearing a suit. Does it matter? No. But is it important? Yeah. Just do it, mate. Just do it. It's a nice, sweet, easy win. We tick box. Meaningless game. Tav's last home game. He's delayed an injection so he can play. He's arranged for his kids to be there. You saw it tonight with Atletico Madrid. Griezmann leading out Atletico Madrid with his kids in his arms. It's just a token gesture. It's a meaningless game. Just let him do it.
Yeah.
Don't pick a fight. Why would you possibly do that? I think there is blame on both sides. Getting the reaction to it, I don't think was good.
No.
Again, if you're disappointing your kids and all the rest of it, I get it. Emotion takes over. That's fine. It's not something that he's ever done before. So I can kind of forgive it. But, you know, you've got to ask the question, why could Barry Ferguson get excellent form out of Raskin and manage Raskin and speak really highly of him afterwards, but Danny Rowe falls out with him and can't get any form out of him? You know, is it a personality clash? Is he just not using them correctly? Do the players not have any faith in the manager? It's really, really difficult to get to the bottom of it. And the reality is we'll never know. But the real problem for me is, you saw that post that Tav put online about his side of the story and all the rest of it, and he did take some blame. You've got to say, look at the players that liked it. Huge swathes of the current squad were giving it likes and saying nice things about him. And then you saw Gassama yesterday with the Tav celebration when he scored. Gassama was like Rowe's boy at Sheff Wed.
Yeah,
you know, they get on well, and that's him essentially backing his captain over his manager. So there's obvious disharmony there. And for how many times we keep saying this, there's obviously a problem in that dressing room with that squad, with the manager. Rumours today that it was a party for Tav and Danny Rowe was told not to be there, although I'm told he also flew back to Germany, so it's no moot point. But, you know, it's just this kind of Hollyoaks nonsense just surrounds Rangers these days, and it's so tiresome and it's so boring, and it always, always happens when the team isn't doing well. There was none of this bollocks during 55. There was none of this bollocks in the run to Seville, because everybody was happy, focused, working hard. As soon as results aren't coming, then it's handbags. And I'm just so weary of it.
But, you know, Alan, everybody wasn't happy. There was players who weren't getting a game. There was players who weren't starting, who thought they should start. You know, but it was kept in-house. It was managed. You know, there's always players unhappy. Any professional football club, only 11 guys start, which means, you know, the rest of that squad is annoyed. The rest of that squad wants to start. The rest of that squad is moaning. But managed correctly, they're all pulling on the same rope. They understand, they buy in, they accept the reasons for it. I think that's just basic man management. Someone pointed this out to me today, and I hadn't actually picked up on this. But since Tav announced that he was leaving, so he gave a press conference and he said, actually, the club haven't offered me anything. So I think I'm getting that right.
Yeah.
Club haven't actually offered me anything. And then the next day, he kind of went public and said, no, look, I'm going to leave at the end of the season. Since then, we lost 4 games in a row. We came back from that trip since that, and that news broke, and we lost 4 games in a row. And our form was okay. You know, our form was okay going into the break. I don't think it was unrealistic that we were all saying, look, you know what, you could do this. You know, a couple of hard games, you know, Celtic away, Hearts away, they're hard games, but, you know, they're winnable. We've won at both those grounds. But I think, and our form, and when I watched the Hibs game, it wasn't just, we weren't trying. You know, the one of the Hibs goals, guys are jogging. You know, and I know technically we could still have won the league. Realistically, it wasn't going to happen. But the guys just looked like they weren't bald. I wonder if something's happened when they've been away. I wonder if some home truths have been told. I wonder if somehow or other that people have got wind of the changes that are coming and the senior players have been unhappy about it. I really don't know what's happened. I'm guessing here as well, but something happened. And I don't think it's coincidence. It is what it is. Both of you sticking with the subject. I mean, Danny Rowe's record against the top 6 sides isn't great. It's really not. He beat Hearts twice and then lost the one. We beat Celtic once, which when Nancy was in charge. In fact, everybody was beating them when he was in charge. But you know, he's failed to beat Celtic since under O'Neill. He's had a few draws, but he's failed to actually beat them. Against Motherwell, it's been win-draw defeat. And against Hibs, it's been win-draw defeat. And against Falkirk, there's been a draw and a couple of victories. So it's not great. I think from my own perspective, Rowe came in at a time when we were just, you know, we were 8th, we were terrible, everybody was unhappy, the squad wasn't working. I kind of feel that anybody half competent could have come in and got that squad performing better than it was, because it wasn't performing at all. And there are some good players in that squad. Obviously, Kavanagh came out today and gave him the dreaded vote of confidence. So, I mean, if nothing else, unless something out of the blue happens, you know, Rowe is here for the summer. He is here. He's, you know, it's going to be his team. It's going to be his pre-season. If you were Kavanagh, and I'll start with you, Alan. If you were Kavanagh, would you allow Danny Rowe to build his own team over the summer, or would you cut your losses now?
I mean, it's a tough question. I think as of today, when that happened, okay, when the last week happened, every fan said, right, I want to hear from the ownership. I want to hear from the ownership what the plan is. So he's come out on the Sunday, immediately after the season ends, and said, this is the plan. So you can't fault him for that. He's delivered, he's given the address, and that's what we wanted. But I also kind of think there's nothing else he could realistically say at this moment in time. Even if the decision's still to be made about Danny Rowe, the day after the season ends, when the manager's left the country, he can't go on Rangers TV and say, yeah, we're actually going to think about getting rid of this guy. We can't do that politically. Yeah. It just wouldn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So although he's come out and backed him, I'm not 100% sure that it reflects the genuine position, because I still think it needs to be reviewed once the dust settles. But from my perspective, and Stuart's touched on it there, the problem is I don't think Danny Rowe has managed the team particularly well. Some of the results have been good and the kind of general crawl up the table's been good and he got us to a good spot. But you look at his actual in-game management. 2-0 up against Celtic at Ibrox, completely dominating them. They bring on Hatate. We don't react. They get 2-2. We all saw it coming. You saw it again.
Yeah.
1-0 up at Tynecastle. They bring on an extra midfielder. Then they beat us. Saw at Parkhead, we went 1-0 up. They take off McCowan and brought on a winger whose name I can't remember. Completely changed the game. They won it. You know, there is a pattern of him not reacting to other managers and being outmanaged by other managers. Even the Motherwell game, we got it back to 2-2 and then brought on Conor Barron. Daft sub.
Strange substitution when you're looking for a winner.
Yeah, exactly. So you can sit down and say, did he get dealt a crap hand? Yes, he did. Has he done some positive things? Yes. Has he brought on some players? Yes, I think he has. But his actual management of matches as they happen, I think, has been really poor. And that's what really, really worries me. Because, I mean, you're absolutely right. What happened in Spain, all the rest of it, you know, if it's because the captain was leaving, I mean, what does that say about the fragility of the players? I mean, give me a break. But they came back and they got, okay, 2-0 down to Motherwell, that's fine. Fought back to 2-2. You think, okay, good, let's go on and win this. And then they blow it. Again, does that suggest there's an inherent problem in the squad? Then you look at taking the lead at Tynecastle, can't hold it. Take the lead at Parkhead, can't hold it. So there's something there. We're doing certain things okay, but then it's just all unravelling during the game. And that, to me, points to the dugout. You know, it points to management. And as you say, players jogging around, they're just not, they just don't seem to believe in the cause. And that's a real, real concern. So I think, unfortunately, there's more in the cons column than there is pros from Danny Rowe. I was surprised that after the Motherwell game, there wasn't more anger directed at the manager. But then after Tynecastle and after Parkhead, it's overwhelming now. And you're going to start pre-season with the manager on the back foot, which we've seen before. And you kind of have that feeling you know how it's going to end.
Yeah, that's my...
Sorry, can I just say something here? In terms of role, of foreign managers, not once have I heard him scream, Arbeit, right? Usually if people are in a situation where they are struggling to communicate or they are frustrated, they break into their native tongue. I heard Advocat doing it. I heard Giovanni Van Bronckhorst do it. You know, they scream at people to get them to work. There has been nothing at that. Okay, you might be a cool, calculated manager. Fine. Or coach. That's fine. I get that. But there is nothing inspirational there. Somebody actually in the comments said that they were doing well against Hearts, and no manager would have changed anything. Bollocks. Souness, Walter Smith, Advocat, all made incremental changes to their team. You might not have spotted it, but they would tell you if you asked them, what did you change here or what did you change there? And they always went on the offensive. They always went on the front foot to try, if the opposition manager was going to do something, they made them second guess what Rangers were going to do, because they made the changes first. And it's okay sticking on another midfielder or another winger. What you do is respond to that before it actually happens. And Rangers have not done anything that. And I just think that Danny Rowe is basically somebody who is standing his hands in his pockets and go, actually, this is going pretty well just now. The whole thing you touched upon, Alan, about respect and managers and all the rest of it. Raskin is going to a World Cup with Belgium. Why should he respect Danny Rowe, who's done absolutely sod all in football? He respected Ferguson because somebody handed him a DVD and said, here, go and watch this guy play. And it was like, wow, this guy knows what he's talking about, because he's done it on the pitch. There's been no other Rangers manager who had anything like that to show these guys what to do. And that's what it's all down to. I have no, you know, Tavernier, for me, I just don't get it. He scored a lot of goals, you know, and what you said there, John, they went away and he's come out and said, well, I'm leaving, and they lost four games. Listen, he's such an inspirational captain. They've won 3 trophies in 10 years. Mm. He's such an inspirational captain. They've done absolutely hee-haw over a long period of time. So down to 4 games should not be anything that actually surprises anybody. But the way he was treated was despicable. Yeah. Absolutely despicable. And the thing is, that Rangers dressing room is such just now, there is not one person that's going to stand up and point a finger at the manager and say, you've got it wrong. I mean, I could quote stand-up fights almost in the Ibrox dressing room when people disagreed. When Archie Knox was going about trying to swing at folk, or Walter Smith was grabbing people, and there were players grabbing other guys that were having to have a go at them to try and keep them out of the firing line. There is no passion like that in that Rangers dressing room, and that is one of the things you have seen over the last 4 or the first 4 games of these so-called title deciders. There is absolutely no backbone, no fight, no guile, no gumption, absolutely nothing. And that, for me, comes from the manager down. And that worries me. Because I'd love to make a prediction that says when Rangers are top of the league at Christmas, everything I've said is rubbish. I think, honestly, that come the end of October or the second international break next season, Rangers could be looking for another manager because the fans will not put up with what they've seen in the last couple of weeks.
No, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, we're sitting here thinking... I remember when Beale came in and there was a bounce and we, you know, having struggled under Van Bronckhorst towards the end of his reign, you know, Beale came in, he got us playing, and we brought in Raskin and Cantwell in the January, and we actually looked pretty decent under Beale, if you recall, towards the end of that season. You know, we put up a bit of a fight. Ultimately, we didn't really scare them for the league, but we put up a bit of a fight. Then the summer came and it all went wrong and he was gone by October, and then Clement came in a very similar story. And that's my concern as well, is that I feel I've seen this film before. I know how it ends and it doesn't end well. You know, on that Hearts point, I can't see the comments myself, but on that Hearts point... everybody watching that game knew Hearts were going to change it at halftime. They had to, because they were being outplayed at home. Everybody who's watched Hearts this season knew they would change it at halftime. And so anticipating what that change is, now fair enough, Rowe doesn't read minds. He might not know exactly what that change is, but he's got a fair idea what that change is going to be, because surely we've been watching Hearts. Surely we understand how Hearts play. They'll have patterns of play. They'll have, there'll be ways that they play. There'll be players on their bench who they can bring on that do this and do that. As it was when they brought on the fella Blair, what's his name?
Little.
When they brought him on, well, you know, he's been around this coach game for a long time. You know what he's bringing. You know what he's going to give you. You know, that's the time you change it. You know, 5 minutes into that second half, you change it. You know, that's what you do. You adjust your men to that. We're the team in the league. And I agree entirely. That's been the thing that's concerned me most. The man management and what looks to me like the inability to change things during a game. The timing of substitutions has baffled me at times this season. And it has been very, very frustrating. I think we're kind of all in a situation just now where, okay, we've heard what Cavan has said. We've heard what he's told us. You know, he's a chance to stick or twist. He's decided to stick. We'll just have to see how that pans out. Looking ahead, Alan, Tavernier, as we know, is leaving. Jigger will probably leave. Aarons, Magoma, Cornelius definitely will leave. Scott Wilson, I'm hoping, will leave. I think Mikey Moore will probably leave as well. I would be surprised if he comes back next season, but you never know. So they're going to leave. We'll see Lyle Cameron come back. Finlay Curtis will come back. McCausland, Danilo, Cifuentes, Nisiala, maybe Cortez. I'm not entirely sure how he's doing in South America. And a raft of young players who've been out at various different clubs this summer. So I guess really what I'm asking you just now is, who do you think is leaving? Who do you expect won't be there? Because there's a few guys who just, you know, who've not had much game time. Bajarmi Bajrami rather has not had much game time under under Danny Rowe. There's clearly an issue with Raskin. You know, I don't know what the issue is, but there's clearly an issue there. Who else do you expect to be leaving Rangers this summer?
Well, I'll just say it's going to be some laugh when we sign Scott Alston for $9 million like we did with Cortez. You know, it turns out that option was an obligation, you know. But no, I mean, it's the list there is pretty frightening. You know, players coming back like Cifuentes, Danilo's, I think I'm right in saying, scored once in Holland, so there's no chance that move's happening. You know, he's coming back, he'll be big wages, and apparently he's contracted for another 2 years as well. So there's still a lot of decks to be cleared. On top of those players, you know, the obvious Cifuentes, Danilo, and things like that, I'd expect Raskin to go. He's obviously, as you say, going to the World Cup with Belgium. You'd expect them to go quite far. I think he starts for them these days. And in that sense, I think he'll have a year left on his deal. So obviously, you just say to his agent after the World Cup, just, you know, we want X million, just go when you can. And I think we'll make profit on him, and, you know, that's the right time for him to go as well. You look at the likes of Fernandes being linked with big moves. I like Fernandes, but I've got to be honest, he's very, very raw. You know, I think he's got all the attributes, but I think he doesn't have as much football experience as you would want. He's like 24, 25. He's not 19, 20. You know, he should be coming into his peak years as a centre-half, and I think he's got a good bit to go. So if we got a decent bid for him, I would accept that, even though I like him. I would keep Chomiti, I've got to say. I think
not a sentence anyone expected to be uttering last October, yeah.
Someone said to me on Friday night when I was out in the pub, he only started one league game before something like November. You know, it was wild how little we used him. So he's only a couple of goals off top scorer as well in the league, and he doesn't hit penalties. So, you know, he's actually come good in the latter half of the season. Now, okay, hat-trick against Falkirk probably, you know, does beef the stats a bit, but he is the best goals per 90 ratio in the whole league. And, you know, the flashing moments of quality we've seen from him have been excellent quality, you've got to say. So suddenly there's a bit of optimism around him to say, look, with better players around him, can we get more out of him? And I think we probably can. That said, if we're offered a good profit on him this summer, I've got little doubt we'll take it. But I expect him to stick around. The rest of them, again, is there anyone you'd really be gutted to see go?
Romans, probably, I can't see him moving already.
No,
you know?
I think we take it as read that Romans, Nadiri and Chikwane will be here no matter what. So that's fine. But the rest of them, there's nobody I would really shed a tear for if they were to leave, if we're honest. Priority number one, centre-half and goalkeeper for me. Butland, I think, has run his race. I said at the pod last time I was on, the last 2 months of every season, his head goes and he starts making mistakes. And it's happened again this season, and it's just wild. He just doesn't have the minerals for it. So goalkeeper, centre-half, I'd be looking at to beef those positions. And we have to. As you say, Giga's going, Cornelius is going. Who does it leave us with? Suter and Fernandes. That's not a title-winning pairing. So we're going to have to spend big in the defensive positions first and foremost for me.
Yeah. Staying with that, Stuart, I mean, where do you think we will strengthen? I mean, what's your priority positions? And what type of players do you need? It's interesting thing Kavanagh said earlier. If I can just find what he said. Asked if Rangers are too soft or lack mental strength, he said, I wouldn't use the word soft, but I think adding more experience, people who have been in these tough situations, is essential. If you look at the squad, we played great at times, but we didn't string it together consistently, and that's what you need to do. So again, with the pieces we have, we add steel, we add experience, we add leadership to that, and we think we can win the title. Now, I have to assume that someone has told him that, because I don't actually think he knows an awful lot about football. And so I don't think these are his observations. I'm assuming they're our manager's observations or our CEO's observations or someone like that. But I thought it was interesting because everybody we're linked with is 19. So not those types of players. You know, give me your thoughts on it. I don't name players if you want, but I was thinking more in terms of the positions and the type of player we're likely to go for.
Yeah, I remember when Dick Advocaat introduced Barry Ferguson, age 19, and everybody threw their arms up and went, this boy's too young. No, the guy could play, and he had a bit of steel about him. that would be the kind of player you'd be looking for in the Rangers team, if they could find any. I think their mindset is totally bewildering in terms of who they're trusting, they're scouting to. You know, I think they're buying the equivalent or bringing in the equivalent of the old Kay's catalogue for footballers. Well, there's one there, and it's only going to cost us four instalments of £3.50 over the next couple of weeks, and we've got them for life. There has to be a complete revamp. And it's okay, you know, Kavanaugh saying, yeah, this is what we need to do. We need to do this, that, the next thing. The fact of the matter is that he's the guy who should be laying it down. This is what we need to find, and these are the people that are going to find it for us. You know, people are accuse me, maybe rightly so, of saying, oh, you can't see these things, that's a bygone age and all the rest of it. You know, Rangers...
People accuse you of that, Stuart?
Rangers, well, actually, I know once... I'll get my trophies and show them. but once the... I mean, Rangers, the whole Sooners revolution was masterminded by a guy who was a builder. And I don't mean builder of teams. It can be done if you actually... set your mind to it. The other thing is, I do wonder what kind of budget Rangers are going to have. They did their balls in last year, signing complete and utter duds. I have to disagree with Shamiti, by the way. Yeah, he scored some fantastic goals, but he doesn't score the simple tap-ins, and he doesn't score the goals when he's supposed to score them. The definition for me of a striker is not how many goals you score, it's who you score them against and when you score them. And he doesn't have either of those two abilities. So, you know, I'm sort of made up a list and copied down one or two of my mates and looked at it. I had a dozen names that you could actually lose, and nobody within the Rangers support would actually say, oh, is he going? Because they've forgotten about these people. Rangers are paying a lot of money for guys to sit on the bench or just sit in the physio's room. I reckon you would need to actually clear that out. Any 15 players could go, because that's where you need to actually have a framework of a team. And there's too many just now that are saying, oh, he's looked quite good, maybe he's needed a chance. You're not going to get another chance. You look across the country to Edinburgh, and do I think that Arsenal will do it again? I don't think we'll find the Old Firm as bad as they have been this season. But it's going to be harder for Hearts to keep up with Celtic than what it is to beat Rangers, and that is a worrying thing. Will Rangers settle for third again next year, missing out in Champions League and all the rest of it, being trophyless? I don't think so. And where are those winners going to come from? I'm sorry, again, I go back to the manager. There is nothing in that manager that inspires me at all. You look at the Scottish Cup game that went to penalties. What did he do to change it up? What did he do to inspire his team? What did he do to actually make it difficult for Celtic? Nothing. We'll get into penalties and we'll take it from there. They had a two-goal lead against Celtic in the league game and blew that as well. Tell me where this inspiration is going to come from, and I'll believe you. I just don't see it myself. And I think a complete clear out is needed, but I don't think Rangers have either the time or the finances to actually do that.
Sorry to jump in. There was something I thought Kavanaugh said really interesting today. He mentioned the term football IQ, and that was kind of music to my ears, because I think we've got a lot of players that have that physical profile but lack the football IQ. Fernandes and Chimiti fall into that category. You know, Barron does as well. He's got the work rate, but he just doesn't have the nous on the ball. Someone like Gassama, again, you can see wee flashes of skill here, but he always picks the wrong option. You know, and you just need players that are going to hit the ground running. It's really interesting because, you know, you hate to mention them, but if you look at that goal they scored yesterday, Maida's goal, the run inside and the cutback to a player that was initially offside and falls back, they've been doing that play for the last four managers. It's like a muscle memory thing for that team. It's just something they do when they need a goal. Rangers don't have anything like that. You know, it's always kind of somebody do something, and you can't rely on that.
Yeah.
There needs to be established patterns of play within the team. Gerrard had it, you know, the fullbacks would get up, sort of crossed each other. You could see what they wanted to do. They had the narrow tens, all this kind of stuff. But there's no patterns of play to this Rangers team. It's always just, let's hope somebody can do it. And that's not good enough. And that's one of the reasons, in my view, the wheels came off so spectacularly as they did.
I mean, we're lacking in match winners, and whilst I tend to agree with Alan that I think Chirmiti has shown enough to persevere with them. I think the biggest problem Chirmiti's got is his price tag, and that's not his fault. You know, he's not responsible for that. But I think the expectation that came with that, you know, he hasn't lived up to that expectation. But I've seen enough to think, yeah, you know, there's a good player there, and a player who, with a season under his belt, will improve again next season. But I do agree with Stuart. You know, we still need someone who can. You know, we need another striker. I'd hoped it would be Majorski, but it's not really proven to be. You know, we do need someone else. You know,
I'll just turn it around completely on you guys. Would you throw some money at Hearts for Shankland?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, why we've not signed him in the past just remains a mystery. And we've all heard the stories that, you know, he was basically agreed last summer, and then somebody, either Thirlwell or Martin, said, no, he's not better than what we've got. You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I've heard it so many times. You don't know if it's true or not. But yes, I would. I still would. You know, he is a proven goal scorer at our level. And he's also proven himself to be a pretty decent captain. So, you know, plus he knocked over a Celtic fan yesterday. So, I mean, that's got to count for something. You know, they said
the irony in Shankland is the Rangers could have got him a year younger for washers, and now they're going to have to pay top dollar.
Yeah.
That just shows you what an absolute car crash it is at Rangers behind the scenes.
Yeah. And, that's kind of what I was trying to get to the start. I don't actually think Kavanagh and the new owners, I don't actually think they've made one good decision since they came in. You know, now time will tell if Danny Rowe is the good decision, you know, might turn out to be a good decision. Currently, you know, very much the jury is out on that.
I think in fairness, sacking Stuart and Thirlwell was what we like to see.
Yeah. Okay, they made that decision, but, you know, it took almost insurrection at Falkirk for Martin to go, and then us, and we've forgotten, you know, the pursuit of his successor was shambolic.
Yeah.
It took weeks. It was played out publicly. We knew who we were going for. Gerard was saying, look, you know, count me out now. I've spoken to people. You know, Danny Rowe said, count me out. Yeah. I'm just not interested anymore.
Danny Rowe called their bluff. They suddenly realised that if he goes, they don't have anybody, and suddenly invited him back into the building.
Yeah,
that's where Rangers went with Danny Rowe, and all of a sudden he's got a manager's job. Again, he said a season, near enough a season, and there is no trophies there. He said, yeah, a chance to win three trophies. In fact, you had a chance to win the biggest trophy of all about 5 weeks ago, and it all went horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah,
and that is what Rangers fans should be asking about, not about the quality of Scottish referees.
We need two right backs, because I don't think you can't rely on Sterling. His fitness record isn't good enough. He can't play on plastic pitches, which is a problem. So you know, we need two right backs. You know, the young lad that came on today, Scala, is apparently a right back, but I mean, I don't think you can begin the season with your backup right back being a 16-year-old. So you know, we need two right backs. We need a couple of centre halves. And that's assuming that we don't sell Fernandes. We need a couple of centre-halves that can come into that team. We clearly do need to strengthen our midfield, because there's no goals in our midfield. You know, so that we need to strengthen that up. And, you know, there's barely an Aimee in our left-back, because, you know, Romans is definitely our first choice, but we need a second-choice left-back.
Yeah.
So, there's it's a big, big sum ahead.
Yeah. And again, you just wonder about, you know, do you just look closer to home and try and beef the squad a bit? You know, guys like Shankland, Elliot Watt, Luke Graham from Dundee, okay, they might not be the superstar names we want, but they're good, solid squad players that know the league. You know, do you start with them and just say, right, let's get these guys in nice and early and just try and build up from there? because, you know, guys like Nadiri and things like that, he's got kind of potential and stuff like that. But again, he's signed from quite a low level, and he will take time to develop at this league. Sometimes, yeah, I think you just need players that are going to hit the ground running. And, you know, do you bring Lyle Cameron back and just say to him, like, we're going to try and use you now, because he knows the league, at least he grafts. You know, it's a real tough decision for Danny Rowe this summer as to what direction he takes the recruitment. Because, you know, I think his signings have been okay so far. But as you say, and you allude to there, the volume of signings he's going to need this summer, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say we're going to need 12 players. And that's a huge financial outlay.
I actually calculated it. You can actually go 15 to 18 players. And that's maybe, you know, taking it to the nth degree and taking it to the extremes. But in all seriousness, there are players, there's a Rangers starting 11 and 7 guys on the bench. And half the time, if you took a dozen of them away, you wouldn't actually notice the difference.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I want to change the subject for the last 5 minutes of the pod for the season. Highlights. And I know I've been Mr. Doom and Gloom. I know I've been Mr. Doom and Gloom and a bit of a cheek. But highlights. It wasn't all bad, was it? What's your highlight or highlights of the season just past, Stuart? Go on, give us a highlight. Or
anybody between Stuart, Thelwell and Martin being sacked, that's as good as it's got.
Alan?
There was one, I set up in the club deck just by in hospitality. There was one game where a guy came out of hospitality completely well. He fell and split his trousers. That was pretty funny. I enjoyed that. But no, I mean, you're so far on the ground. Probably that, my half-time pie being 2-0 up against Celtic at home and completely dominating them.
Yeah.
I thought, finally, we've got it. We've got it over.
I agree.
It's clicked. This is great. Probably those 15 minutes were the highlight of the season.
Yeah.
Even if you think back to, God, I can't even...
I mean, beating them at Parkhead, the game at Parkhead.
That was
a very nice start to the year.
Yeah, but we're so far behind, it was always just a kind of wee unexpected bonus. But to go into that game as favourites and expect to win and be 2-0 up and actually, you know, two really nice goals, that was brilliant. There was one European game we conceded a goal. It was like a free kick just inside our own half, and they just kind of rolled it along the ground, and our defensive wall was so high, the guy just ran in and you know, that is literally the worst goal I've ever seen Rangers concede.
Yeah, Europe was very disappointing this year.
Bizarrely, he probably has about the top three or four highlights of the season.
We've won you round.
No, I'm taking hallucinogenic drugs here just now. I mean, the overhead, I mean, the goal yesterday was an absolute belter. I mean, that was a great goal.
And then the first goal was a lovely finish as well.
It was a good finish. Even his header, I have to say, the overhead kick against Celtic was, you know, something worth actually putting on the side of a gable end. And so he's actually, he's flattered to deceive. I would say he's actually, I was almost saying guilty of the highlights because he's actually made you think it was actually going to be better than it was. I think actually one of the kind of better nights was way back at the start of the season under Russell Martin and Rangers. It was opposition. They beat them 3-0.
Oh, Pilsen.
In the European tie. That was almost a sit back moment in time and go, aha, he's got it. This is what they're supposed to be doing. Come on, bring on the rest of the season. And it just went from bad to worse after that. Yeah. I mean, honestly,
we beat the Greeks and we were lucky to beat them, to be fair. But we beat the Greeks.
Greeks have never been good. The Turks beat them in 1974 and they've never recovered. So, it's not something that they would... We should be boasting too much about. I mean, there've been one or two highlights, you know, but it's they've been dampened down, you know, incredibly by the weight of the disappointment.
I'm trying to end on a high note, Stuart.
All right,
you and me. So, listen, last thing, silver linings. What anything we could grasp to help us look forward to next season? So here's a couple, right? Finlay Curtis. You know, Curtis obviously came in, did quite well under Martin, fell out of it again, as you might expect a young player to do, you know, and came into a difficult Rangers team at that point, team not playing well. Went to Kilmarnock and has had a good spell at Kilmarnock. Scored again today. You know, if the, let's put it this way, if he was a 17-year-old who had just come through the Kilmarnock team this season, scoring the goals he's scored and performing as he's performed, we would be talking about signing him. You know, yep. We'd be a player who would be on our radar. So I'll throw him as a silver lining. I'm going to throw Romans in because if he... I just pray he's not injury prone. But if he's not, I think he's a real player in there. I think he could be... You know, he could... I remember a long time ago listening to an Italian coach talking about the importance of fullbacks, how fullbacks for him were actually the difference in teams. Teams that had good fullbacks just had this extra option. Tavernier was at one time a very, very good fullback, but we've not had a good left back since kind of Bonner was at his height. I'm really hoping that Romans might just be the thing. So they're my two silver linings. Yourselves, guys, have you any silver linings? Anything we can leave the listener with before we head off for the summer?
Can I just pick up on something you said there, John?
Yeah.
About somebody scoring all those goals for Kilmarnock, he would be a target. There's a mindset at Ibrox, and it has been there for a long, long time, is that we have these players on our boots and we need to let them go out and experience the world and then bring them back without giving them a chance themselves. It's you know, the irony of ironies that we actually have players that others get a tune out of that Rangers don't think are that good. And it's almost as if you're bringing young guys through to then release them and hope you get a transfer fee for them rather than actually making them the mainstay of your actual first team.
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely been a bit of that in the past. I think with Cutlass, I think with us bringing in Scott Olsen, I think the assumption was Scott Olsen, you know, a guy with 40-odd caps for Denmark would be a guy who would go on and do very well for us. It's obviously turned out to be entirely different, but I guess they thought the chances, you know, Cutlass's playing time might be limited, so you know, send him out to Kilmarnock where he'll get games. That's worked out, and I would hope he'll come back and not be getting put out, but I don't know. Anyway, Alan, anything you want to finish us on, any silver linings you've got?
Silver linings, I mean, it's slim pickings. It's real slim pickings.
Don't get the easy questions here, Alan. The difficult ones.
I think the only vague silver lining we've got is we have enough to spend this summer. We've seen it this season. You know, we did spend a lot in January and it didn't get us where we needed to be. But I think we're going to spend a good chunk of money this summer. We might bring some in if we sell certain players, such as Raskin.
I think
you'll see us spend a couple more at the sort of Trimity level. Just guys. But if Calvin is true to his words, we're not going to spend it on a 21-year-old that's spent a season at Everton injured and not played. It's going to be guys at that level that can come in, hit the ground running with experience, with footballing IQ, as he says, because those are the guys that we need and can be difference makers. Okay. But proof of the pudding's in the eating. You know, there's no point in spending big if it's not the right profile. You know, the Scott Olsen signing in January made a lot of sense. You know, given his profile, he had a World Cup to play for. He was perceived to be a player that was above the Scottish League. But not long after he came in, there was interviews about his former coaches. Oh, this is how you need to deal with him. This is his mindset. And straight away, I was like, Christ, alarm bells. You know, this is why he's flopped at his last two clubs, because he just doesn't have the mindset. And you saw that here as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, profiling players and ticking those boxes on paper is one thing. Coming into an environment like Rangers, where, you know, dropping a point, losing a goal is a catastrophe. That's a completely different kettle of fish. It takes a special type of player. I know if the fan of every club says that, but when we say it, we know it's true. It genuinely takes a special type of player to succeed here, and that's what we need to focus on.
We lost four games in a row and we genuinely all want the manager sacked.
Yeah. Well, let's be
realistic. That doesn't happen at every club.
Yeah, the thing with Danny Rule staying on, if he does stay on, his first game is going to be a European qualifier. If that's at home and we go a goal down, straight away there's going to be fans around me going, yeah, I told you she was sacked. How it's going to go. Can you keep him when he's got such limited credit in the bank? That's how it's going to go. That's the pressure. The first Old Firm game next season will be at Parkhead. Our first league game is probably going to be Tynecastle or Pittodrie, the way the fixtures flip every season. You know, again, as soon as there's drop points, that's when the chatter starts. And the Americans must now know that. Given what happened to Russell Martin, they must know you're not going to get a project for 18 months here, guys. This has hit the ground running time.
Yeah.
And if they're going to put all their faith in Danny Rule, then good luck.
Look, if we had beaten Motherwell, as we should have,
yeah.
If we'd beaten Motherwell, if we'd gone to Tynecastle and drawn and then lost at Parkhead, I actually think we'd be having a different conversation. I actually think we'd be saying, you know what, he's done enough to, you know, he was eighth when he came in, he was behind the eight ball, you know, yeah, you know, we just gave ourselves too much to do. We had chances, we just gave ourselves too much to do. I actually think we would be saying that. As it is, the performance against Motherwell was so, so poor that, you know, we just haven't recovered from that. And that's the one for me. That's the big, big body for me was that performance, how we put the team out, the players we chose, and not changing it when it was going so badly wrong. Anyway, gentlemen, I've taken up... You're the last silver line, aren't you?
I thought we were going to end on a high note.
I know, but what can I tell you?
Yeah.
I've tried, but it's just, you know, it's just not been possible.
A high C. Everybody's all together. It sounds like a Vienna boys choir on this.
Here's the high note. This is
stylistics.
This is the last time you need to listen to us this season. Here's a silver lining for you all. As I said, this is the last podcast of the season. So, Alan, Stuart, I really do appreciate you giving up your Sunday evening. You can go back and watch golf or drink copiously or whatever it is you guys do on a Sunday evening. Maybe it's both. You know,
I won't be watching a highlight stream of Rangers, put it that way.
No, probably not.
Well, enjoy the summer, gents. All right.
I'll see you next season
with our, we're all fresh faced and bushy tailed and
optimistic, full of hope and optimism again. Exactly. Listen, I love a World Cup. I enjoy a World Cup. There's nothing better than 8 games of football on a day. I do enjoy that, and I look forward to the World Cup, and every now and then you get a game that you remember for the rest of your life. So who knows, that might just help raise the memory of this season for me. Listen, as I said, it's our last podcast, so I need to thank you guys. I need to thank everybody who's listened. I just remind you that you can get the podcast on a variety of different platforms: Acast, iTunes, YouTube, Castbox, Stitcher, and of course Spotify. Thanks for listening all season. We really do appreciate it. We hope you do enjoy it, even if you maybe don't always agree with us. We're going to take a short break, and then Frankie will announce a strict pre-season program, in the hope that we can return next season with better puns, and remembering our sponsors, and perhaps even pronouncing the names of any new signings we've got correctly. And I have been guilty of all three of them this season. So in the meantime, enjoy your summer, and thanks very much for listening.